It's Monday, August 10th, and there aren't a lot of movies where people say, "Please, Mr. President, we need you to give the memo." We start here. President Trump takes over for a deadlocked Congress, issuing new executive actions to help struggling Americans.
When will this relief get in the hands of Americans that need it? What date?
We think it's going to be very rapid. We want it to be very rapid.
But what does he have the authority to do, and how quickly will these take effect? Big events have all been canceled, except this one.
They're aware of the risk, but they kind of just say, we ride motorcycles, risks are sort of what we do.
We'll take you to South Dakota, where 250,000 people have descended on a small town. And Kodak's big plans are suddenly blurry.
Kodak shares spike more than 2,000%.
When stock prices skyrocket before anyone's supposed to know about that big government loan, people get suspicious. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. I've got good news, and I've got bad news. The bad news is that the U.S. officially passed its 5 millionth COVID-19 case this weekend. 5 million people with various forms of symptoms, but it underlines how staggeringly widespread this virus is. More than 1,000 people are still dying in this country every day. The good news is that cases usually can tell you where we're going next, and in this country, cases are on the decline. In fact, according to New York Times data, only 5 states are currently seeing upward trends. Virginia, Hawaii, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, South Dakota. They're going up. In other states, cases are falling, or at least staying level. Officials say more residents have been scared straight, but positivity rates remain alarmingly high.
Texas reporting a record high 7-day average of positive tests, suggesting the virus is still spreading rapidly. Nearly 1 in every 5 people testing positive.
Again, though, as Americans stay inside and stay safe, that means businesses will not be at their usual capacities. Yeah, we're back in the bad news part, by the way. Sorry about that. But remember in April, Americans really, really needed help. Because of how long this has gone, they still do.
With over 30 million Americans unemployed and desperate for help, tonight on Capitol Hill, last-ditch talks over a relief bill went nowhere.
It was a disappointing meeting.
We did not make any progress today.
So as we expected, President Trump decided not to wait for Congress. On Saturday, he went ahead and took several executive actions with the aim of helping people more quickly. But how much help will Americans get, and how quickly will that help come? That has been the singular focus of ABC's White House correspondent Rachel Scott since these actions were announced. Rachel, can you walk me through this? Because everyone last week is saying, you know, there's executive orders coming. There's executive orders on the way.
Right, Brad. And so on Saturday, the president unexpectedly calls this press conference. And we knew the president was getting frustrated by the negotiations with Congress. And so sources told us ahead of time to brace for some type of executive action on coronavirus relief.
Thank you very much, everybody.
So we head into his golf club, and inside the ballroom.
Good afternoon. My administration has been working around the clock in good faith to reach an agreement with Democrats on additional China virus relief.
The president comes out to the podium and he says that he's had enough, and he announces some action here.
Democrats are obstructing all of it. Therefore, I'm taking executive action. We've had it. And we're going to save American jobs and provide relief to the American workers, that I'll be signing these bills in a very short period of time.
Not all of this, though, is an executive order, though, Brad. Some of this is a little bit less than that.
Yeah, but Rachel, so then what are these? Like, what are they and what do they do?
Yeah, well, the president took 4 executive actions, but only one actually was an executive order, and that was on evictions. The other 3 are what they call executive memoranda, and they hold a little less teeth, Brad. And one of them is on a big issue right now, unemployment.
For this reason, I'm taking action to provide an additional or an extra $400 per week in expanded benefits. $400, okay?
Listen, there are some major strings attached here. You know, the president said he wants to restore unemployment benefits, but he wants to slash those weekly unemployment checks to $400. That's $200 less than what they were before.
States will be asked to cover 25% of the cost using existing funding.
But the catch here is that he's also asking states to cough up $100 for each resident who is out of work. And Remember, Brad, many of these states are already strapped for cash. We are in the middle of a pandemic right now. I mean, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo called it simply impossible.
So I'm protecting people from eviction.
And then you have evictions, right? Americans that are fearing getting kicked out of their apartments or their homes foreclosing. The president promising to protect people, but it's not that clear cut. His executive action is only directing the Department of Housing to find a way to help with evictions. It is not an eviction moratorium.
Fourth, I'm signing a directive providing relief to student loan borrowers. Earlier this year,
we... And so then the president also said he was planning on suspending interest on federal student loans and deferring payroll tax cuts. And this one's actually a big one. This is something that Democrats and Republicans actually agree on. Members in both parties say that delaying payroll taxes will do little to help American workers. But the president still pushing forward with this.
If I'm victorious on November 3rd, I plan to forgive these taxes and make permanent cuts to the payroll tax. I'm going to make them all permanent.
And he's getting some heat from one member in his own party, Republican Senator Ben Sasse, questioning the president's ability to move forward with this right on his own. He says the president does not have the power to rewrite the payroll tax law. He called the president's actions here an unconstitutional slop. But the president's still placing the blame on the Democrats after both parties failed to reach a deal on this.
We reiterated in very strong terms our offer. We come down a trillion from our top number, which is 3-4. They go up a trillion from their top number, which was 1. And that way we could begin to meet in the middle. Unfortunately, they rejected it.
Democrats say, look, we passed a $3 trillion stimulus package back in May before all of this expired. And they offered to meet Republicans halfway on this. But the White House called that a non-starter, Brad.
Yeah, well, Rachel, like, what's interesting to me here is Democrats could conceivably challenge this, right? They could say, hey, President sidestepped Congress. That's not cool. We're going to challenge this in court. But that doesn't seem like great politics, right? Like, if you haven't been able to come up with a compromise, say, oh, we're actually going to stop the one guy who's, like, pushing the ball forward here.
Right. And White House officials are essentially daring Democrats to do this, right? To sue the president over these measures, over trying to get relief to the American people. And the president even said himself to Democrats, go ahead and try it.
If we get sued, it's somebody that doesn't want people to get money. Okay. And that's not going to be a very popular thing.
While most Republicans say that they're thankful, right, for the president stepping forward, taking this action, they want this to be worked out in Congress. It is Congress at the end of the day that controls federal spending, not the president.
In fact, the president doesn't extend the federal eviction moratorium. I looked at the executive order. It doesn't do that. It simply directs HUD to find a way to help people and identify federal funds. It doesn't include extending the eviction moratorium.
Well, look, that's not entirely true. I mean, in there...
Well, it is true.
Secretary of Health, if any determination is made...
And look, the reality here is that the president's executive actions are extremely limited. I think the big problem here, too, is that people are really suffering. You know, there are 30 million Americans out of work right now.
When will this relief get in the hands of Americans that need it? What date?
We think it's going to be very rapid. We want it to be very rapid.
And
it's going to
I repeatedly asked the president at that press conference when that relief is going to get in the hands of Americans. And he could not give me a firm answer.
He signed an executive order today, and Americans want to know when they're going to see this relief.
Very soon. They're going to see it very soon. Look, it's there it is, right there. Excuse me. There it is, right there. Go ahead.
The $600 in addition to the unemployment payments pretty much put me right where I needed to be, you know, to cover my current financial obligations.
And there are people out there that are watching the president's news conference, listening to what he's saying, believing that relief could soon be on the way. And if that money does get held up in court, if this is legally challenged, it could take months. And if their state doesn't sign on, they may not even see a check. And with no nationwide moratorium on evictions right now, Americans could still not have a roof over their heads. And it's not clear that the president's executive actions are going to cut it, that it's going to solve all of those issues, Brad.
It's a great point that amid all the pomp and circumstance, saying help is on the way does not mean people will get the help that they were accustomed to over the last several months or that it's coming quickly enough for them and their households. Rachel Scott in Bedminster, New Jersey. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks, Brad.
So you remember last week we talked about schools reopening in the state of Georgia. There was this one picture that went viral of students crammed into a hallway, shoulder to shoulder, some wearing masks, but many not.
It was worse than I thought it would be because I thought more kids would be wearing masks, and I thought social distancing would be attempted in the school, but it wasn't.
The student who took that photo said she posted it because the crowds there were making her nervous. Well, she was suspended on the grounds that she was breaking rules about cell phone use, on going on social media during school hours, and posting photos of kids' faces.
Let's get right to that breaking news out of Paulding County.
That suspension has been rescinded as, guess what? According to a letter to parents obtained by ABC News, that school now has several cases of COVID-19.
Tonight, the school reporting nearly a dozen cases, and we've just learned they will move to digital learning.
Now it's out of, what, hundreds of students. So what happens when tens or even hundreds of thousands of Americans gather for a party? ABC's Trevor Ault joins us now from South Dakota. Every year this town has this huge motorcycle rally. That rally still went on as planned this weekend. It has now become America's largest gathering since the pandemic took hold. Trevor, how many people showed up to this rally?
Well, the estimates, Brad, are 250,000 bikers.
Wow.
Rumbling into the town of Sturgis. And I got to tell you, Sturgis' general population is 7,000. It is quite a sight. And you would think that you had stepped into a time machine, and that's not meant as a dig at South Dakota. You would think it's a time machine because no one is really behaving as if we are in the midst of a pandemic.
Did you consider not coming at all this year, or was it a done deal? You were going to come.
Done deal. I don't care about the COVID, you know. So
I kind of think they exaggerate the real effect of what the virus is doing. Myself,
been a little overstated.
I think a little overstated.
You're not too worried about it.
I'm not too worried about it.
I mean, I don't like a mask. But
there are, of course, social distancing recommendations. People are told, hey, try to wear a mask. Nobody's going to do that. And when you ask them about it, they're not oblivious to the pandemic. They're aware of the risk, but they kind of just say, we ride motorcycles. Risks are sort of what we do.
I mean, we're all here because of the American freedoms that we had, that we were born with, and don't want to give them up.
We're ready to return to normal, and this is an event that is an annual tradition for tens of thousands of people. They were not going to be deterred from this, Brad.
Well, and so are there concerns about the virus spreading amongst these people? And since I imagine a lot of them are out of town, probably even out of state, about them bringing it back to where they're from.
Absolutely. And I think that that's probably one of the most prominent reasons that health officials say this could serve as a super spreader event, because on top of people just congregating, you know, President Trump visited Mount Rushmore last month. They thought maybe that would be dangerous because people were together, but they weren't social distancing. A lot of those people were from South Dakota, where the virus really has not been running rampant. This is a very different story.
There's probably about 300 of us out here.
Wow, 300, no kidding. Okay,
yeah.
All from the same area?
All over the country.
You've got people coming from both coasts, from all over the place, congregating, mingling together, often drinking into the late or early hours of the morning, and then they're going back to where they came from.
Is the city on board with this, Trevor? Like, is this all sanctioned?
Well, it is sanctioned, Brad, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they were on board with it. In fact, they took a survey a few months ago of all the residents in the city to see how they would feel. And the majority of the population, 60%, said they wanted it canceled. So you'd think maybe the city would move forward with canceling it. The problem with that is good luck telling 250,000 bikers what to do.
Did you consider not holding anything this year?
No.
It was for sure going
to
happen.
You know, we've always been, and this used to be a joke, oh, we're going to be here unless they put the National Guard out and not let anybody in. And then that quit being funny this year. But, you know, we just, our governor took an approach that government's job is not to run people's lives, but to just give them accurate information from which they could make up their own decisions.
Sure.
And that's the way all these people here are looking at it. And so
they essentially realized, even if this city doesn't sponsor this event or make it official, all these bikers are just going to come into town, flood the campgrounds.
Really? They felt
anyway.
Like they couldn't shut it down. They felt like they couldn't enforce rules if they decided
yes.
to institute them?
Yes. The city basically said, this is inevitable and the crowds are going to be here whether we like it or not, so we better make the best of it. So they decided to officially sponsor it. That way they could provide hand sanitizer. They could provide some guidance for social distancing.
Planning for the mass COVID-19 testing happening after the Sturgis rally is still underway.
Essentially, the city was handcuffed to the fact that this has such a huge tradition that happens every single year, not to mention the fact that these businesses count on this event happening every year. I talked with one campground owner, Buffalo Chip Campground.
This is it, okay? This whole property out here was born for this motorcycle event.
This is the only event they do. They hold concerts. It's 9 days out of the year. This is the only time they make any money. I talked to one business owner who essentially said that she wears a mask, her employees wear masks. They don't tell their customers what to do, and they've had customers give them a hard time for wearing a mask.
What do they say?
Those are doing no good. Why are you wearing it?
Really?
Yeah.
And an interesting thing that she told me, Brad, is that on top of, you know, trying to keep her business afloat, their business sells masks, and they were having bikers come in and buy them, not because they were going to wear them. They're certainly not wearing them here. They were buying them because they come from states where masks are required.
Right.
So they would come in, buy the masks that they like, but they weren't going to take that precaution here.
I should say, we actually reached out to the mayor of Sturgis, and the mayor's spokesperson says he's been out of town all weekend and wasn't able to do an interview because he was gone, had left the town. Trevor Ault there in South Dakota. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, have stock prices just lost their minds, or is it something more nefarious than that? We'll talk to a former enforcement lawyer for the SEC after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
With so many American industries in a free fall right now, it's great when certain companies are able to pivot, keep making money, and importantly, keep employees at work. That was the pitch from the iconic American business Kodak recently, as it presented a new opportunity.
Kodak has been around for over 100 years in manufacturing of chemicals. I just want to point that out. This is not new for us.
Instead of film equipment, Kodak, the company said, it was going to get a government loan to switch around its factories and start producing generic drugs. There was even this big announcement at the White House.
With this new agreement, my administration is using the Defense Production Act to provide a $765 million loan to support the launch of Kodak Pharmaceuticals.
But as the president was praising the company, federal regulators appeared to start looking into why so many people had been buying Kodak stock before the deal was even announced. And over the weekend, we learned this deal is now on hold as critics cry foul. And there are issues here you're going to continue to see beyond Kodak during the pandemic response. So let's all get on the same page. Jacob Frankel worked at the Securities and Exchange Commission for years. In fact, he was a senior counsel for their enforcement division. He joins us now. Jacob, first of all, can you walk me through this Kodak debacle?
Well, what happened was Kodak shares spiked more than 2,000% around the announcement.
A stock that started the week closer to $3 has soared to more than $30 by Wednesday.
It was jumping so much, stock trading was halted on Kodak for a while today.
What is of interest to regulators is who was buying the stock right before the announcement.
Are you worried that somebody might have leaked this and that the SEC needs to be looking at maybe the people on the other side of the government or even someone within Kodak who might have profited from this inappropriately?
We did our best to keep everything confidential.
So you have two pieces. One is what is traditionally referred to as insider trading. You know, what information do insiders have or people with unique access to information?
There was heavy trading volume in Kodak one day before the loan was officially announced, which resulted in a windfall for executives, some of whom received previously undisclosed options the day before the Trump deal was announced.
And the other piece of this is whether some of these companies, in releasing information, are doing it in a somewhat manipulative way, which is to time the release of information to cause or enable other events.
This morning, hopeful news from biotech company Moderna reporting their vaccine has been found safe and effective in the first phase of its human trial.
You know, the Moderna stock price rise, when the announcement came out, the stock ran from 66 to 80, and then after that, they announced the stock sale. You know, there are a lot of things that regulators are going to look at, and Congress is interested in this as well, is whether people are just taking advantage of everything coronavirus, everything COVID-19, when it involves public companies.
Today, Senator Elizabeth Warren alleged that Kodak's chairman and other board members bought stock prior to the announcement. Kodak says the CEO has regularly purchased Kodak stock since he first joined the company in 2013.
When you used to work at the SEC, right, is there a crime here that you can see? Or is this just like a weird mishmash of circumstances?
Well, the short answer is we don't know. And you ask a great question because, you know, we see so many SEC cases that end up being prosecuted criminally by the Department of Justice.
Republican Congressman Chris Collins of New York is resigning ahead of an expected guilty plea in an insider trading case. He was accused of sharing inside information from a biotech company.
But when we're talking about COVID-19, the SEC, Department of Justice, and Congress have a real heightened sensitivity to any announcement around a COVID-19 or coronavirus solution. And if and when there is a significant price strike, what that does is that causes alarm bells to go off at the SEC and other securities regulators, such that it is almost inevitable that they are going to investigate to see if there was fraud, if there was insider trading around the announcement about the COVID-19 solution or coronavirus solution.
This Rochester couple, like so many of their friends and neighbors, worked at Kodak for decades and were accustomed to job cuts.
Kodak's been here forever, and it's about time they started making a comeback.
Well, and so now that's interesting to me, Jacob, because like right now, this deal is now on hold, which fine. If you're a government regulator, you want to get to the bottom of it. I'm imagining a worker in Rochester, New York, where Kodak is based. You were about to reimagine your entire workflow, like your entire daily life. Now, what, are you just in limbo? Like, how do these investigations and the actions of companies affect, you know, people down the line?
Investigations certainly affect the morale of employees because it really causes them to wonder, were corporate executives or others taking advantage? And, you know, the one thing we also, you know, often forget about is when you see these market moving events, and at this juncture, we don't know who are the individuals who are trading, but the SEC certainly is very vigilant about the movement of the price. And when it comes to some of the smaller companies in particular, what are called small cap companies, and you have the mom and pop investors, the teachers, the retirees who are investing their savings in very small, unheard of companies that are now announcing these COVID-19 solutions, you know, the SEC is acutely aware of its responsibility to engage actively in investor protection. And in fact, we've seen in the last 6 months, which is really unprecedented, the SEC suspend trading, actually stop trading for 10 days in the stock of more than 35 companies.
Is there any grounds for concern from your perspective?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't involved in the deal. The concept of the deal is good, but I'll let you know. We'll do a little study on that. We'll find out. If there is any problem, we'll let you know about it very quickly. But I wasn't involved in it.
I think we're going to see a lot more of this. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. A lot of volatility and a lot of focus by U.S. law enforcement and U.S. regulators in this space.
And an interesting wrinkle to all this is that if you're under investigation by the SEC, you're not legally obligated to say you're under investigation by the SEC. And this weekend, Kodak announced this new special committee to conduct a review of, quote, recent activity by the company and related parties, end quote, in association to this loan. All right, Jacob Frenkel, formerly of the SEC, now a partner at the law firm Dickinson Wright. Thanks so much, Jacob.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
And one last thing. American malls were suffering before most Americans knew the word coronavirus, but the mall near you could look permanently different when this is all said and done. According to the Wall Street Journal, the group that owns the most malls in America is in talks with Amazon to take over space left vacant by Sears and JCPenney and turn that space into Amazon fulfillment centers. We've already seen non-traditional tenants in a lot of failing mall space.
The former JCPenney property located in Westwood Mall has been purchased by a local church.
But this would be essentially an industrial warehouse taking over the old Pennies. Instead of families going to that Northside parking lot, it would be mostly trucks and vans heading to loading bays for what they call last mile deliveries. And this is actually what makes malls so attractive for Amazon. I mean, they're huge, but they're also located at the perfect spot. Not right in the middle of a residential area, but not in the middle of nowhere. Right off the highway, easy access to communities around the region, and lots of parking spots. In fact, some malls are already leasing parking space to UPS and FedEx just for the spots themselves. But think about what other mall tenants are thinking. That stationery store that sits right inside the mall up on the second level, it used to count on people coming into Sears, riding the escalator up to the second floor, and then popping into the mall from there. Oh, what do you know? I forgot we needed stationery. Let's go in. That is not going to happen anymore if Amazon is there. Then again, it's even worse if the whole wing is empty, attracting a different kind of mall rat. And in this era, it's not clear which businesses will still be paying rent 12 months from now, except Amazon. For better or for worse, they will come out of this stronger than ever. And if you work at Amazon, that means you're smelling, what, Wetzel's pretzels every time you come to work? Like, I don't know if that's a plus or a minus, but just imagine. Start here tomorrow and hit us up with a rating and review if you get a chance. Let us know you're out there. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.